You know, isn't it interesting that we're looking at what's coming up with 9/11 and the 10-year anniversary, Disaster Preparedness Week, and all that goes along with it, and we're coming off of a hurricane and an earthquake right here in our nation's capital?
I think it reminds you that the essence of being prepared is to be prepared for what's unpredictable. It's not what you expect that is difficult. It's what you don't expect. And so this was a reminder, but apparently one that was perhaps not as bad as we feared.
Of course, no one expected 9/11, and that led to such a profound change in government. And in many ways, as the second secretary, you might have had a more difficult job than the first secretary, at least in some sense. Give us your impressions of what DHS was like then and how it's evolved since.
Well, of course, the first secretary, Tom Ridge, did a great job of just building the basic foundation for a new department, which even when I took it over was the third largest department in the government. When I arrived, it's kind of like a house in which the foundation and the basic frame had been put up, but the walls were not up and the interior wasn't fully developed. And the challenge was to take 180,000 terrific people and integrate them in a brand new landscape.
So how does the house look now? What else needs to be changed and how much has it developed?
I think the department actually has matured quite a bit. I mean, even during my period of time, I saw a tremendous change. First of all, the business processes got much more mature and the ability to execute on things became much more like what you see in a regular department. But beyond that, the key issue was to get everybody integrated around a series of unified missions. And that meant building a capability to plan and to train and to exercise and ultimately to carry out in a joint fashion. And there were some bumps on the road, but I think if I look at where we were in 2008, I saw a tremendous change, and I think the country did too.
A lot of the components that came into DHS were a little bit kicking and screaming. I remember, for example, FEMA didn't want to lose the FEMA.gov in their email address as everyone switched to DHS.gov. What did you learn from the process about change management and getting people to maybe let go of some of that baggage they came in with?
Well, part of what we tried to do is to respect the heritage of the legacy agencies. I know originally there was a concept that maybe everybody ought to give up their uniforms and their distinctive badges and come in under one banner. And while I think it was important to get everybody to be unified around the concept of one DHS, we concluded that it was a mistake to ask people to sacrifice what were in some cases centuries of legacy and history, whether it was the Coast Guard or people who were in customs and people in FEMA. So we developed a policy of allowing people to have their original badge and brand, but also to carry the new badge and brand. And I think people liked that because it respected the heritage, for example, of the Coast Guard or the Secret Service in a way that was important to those who had joined those organizations before DHS.
As far as the 9/11 Commission recommendations go, has there been a significant amount of progress in meeting those recommendations, and did you find those recommendations to be helpful?
Huge progress in every respect but one. They were very helpful suggestions, and what we saw over the years after the Commission was a tremendous increase in information sharing and intelligence sharing. A great example of that was the successful raid against Bin Laden's compound, which I don't think could have happened prior to 2001. We saw the rise of secure identification at our borders and within our borders, and we saw aviation security and port security, all of those increasing. What's the one recommendation that was ignored? That Congress pull itself together and centralize all of its Homeland Security congressional oversight in the same way that the Congress does with the Department of Defense. That's the one suggestion that every secretary has endorsed and begged for and has never actually happened.
We're speaking with Michael Chertoff, the second Homeland Security Secretary, now in private consulting. And I wanted to get back to the idea of hurricanes, because we're just digging out from one. And FEMA got a lot of criticism. DHS got some criticism at the time of Hurricane Katrina. And now it seems like the federal response for Irene was so vast and talked about that the hurricane wasn't big enough to justify what it was that was mobilized for it.
That's a very interesting point. Prior to Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the general approach taken by FEMA was to give the state and local government first response obligation. And then FEMA would come in not really as a classic emergency agency, but as an agency that would handle individual assistance, public assistance, and also provide commodities for people who were responding to the storm. In Katrina, because of the inability of the state and local government to respond, it suddenly fell to the federal government for the first time to be the first responder. And while some parts performed masterfully, like, for example, the Coast Guard, FEMA was really never equipped and trained to carry out that role. So after Katrina, we really changed the doctrine to some extent, and we built for the first time a capability to work with state and local governments to build very detailed plans, which is what was done in the southern part of the country first. And the idea here was to have the capability to stand in reserve if necessary with the equipment and the training to come in if there was a failure on the part of the local or state governments. And that worked very well in Hurricane Gustav and Hurricane Ike when they came along in 2008. So what you're seeing now is the legacy of that. Now, some people argue that the federal government has stepped forward too much and is assuming too much of a role. I think, though, that after Katrina, the expectations of the American public have changed, and the federal government will always have to stand as a backup, even for the initial response.
I'm curious about your bottom line advice for feds and agencies. After all, this is what you do now, is you're in private consulting. How would these people be able to prepare for, as you put it, prepare for the unexpected? How do you even begin to start with something like that?
Well, I mean, I think the way you start is by building a plan. And what we did when I was in office is we put together a list of about 15 various kinds of catastrophic scenarios, and we began the process of building a series of plans. Now, it doesn't mean the plan will fit precisely what happens, but the process of planning and operating jointly gives you a good running start when you have to improvise. You know, you saw that in 2009 when we had the H1N1 flu scare. Because we had built an avian flu plan in 2006 and 2007, the new administration was able to come in. They were able to use that plan as a baseline from which to improvise for the H1N1, and that actually allowed the government to respond effectively. So the planning process and the joint activity process on the civilian side is, I think, what you need in order to build that flexibility to respond to a real catastrophe.